that it's not easy to understand him. In fact, he may appear in such ways that sort of apparently contradicts who he really is. You know, just for example, well, in the Damodar Leela, you mentioned last night too how he ran in fear of Mother Yashoda. This is contradictory, because he is afraid of no one. Rather, fear personified is afraid of Krishna. Yes, but he became afraid of Mother Yashoda, who is, you could say, well, she's sort of like a middle-aged housewife. And you wouldn't expect someone very super powerful and just extraordinary to become afraid of a middle-aged housewife. Not usually. But this is what happened. And he was running. And he was crying. Yes. So we talked a bit about these types of things. And then we actually mentioned that tonight we would discuss something related. It's, you know, a little similar, but at least it's related. And that is how, when, well, how there are different bad qualities, like confusion, sleeping, arguing. And anyway, we'll read some, there's a whole list, actually. So Krishna is free from those things. Lust, anger, greed, pride, envy. Krishna is free from these things. What to speak of Krishna being free, but even his devotees, at least his advanced devotees, are free from these things. So, of course, Krishna is free. But sometimes in the course of his pastimes, Krishna displays some of these bad qualities. But when he does, then they become good qualities. And he becomes glorified by his displaying them. And yes, he becomes glorious. He's already glorious, but he becomes more glorious. And he becomes glorified when he displays these qualities. So what this involves then is reading. I'm going to read a verse, a couple, I think it's a couple of verses, from Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu. They are from, where are they from? A literature called Vaishnav Tantra. Which lists out 18 great faults. Well, actually from the Vishnu Yamala. Now the problem is, the Sanskrit is in a different, we say, font. So it's very hard to read. Yeah, it's hard to read. I'll try and read the Sanskrit at least. Mastandra brahmo rukha rukna rasata kama ubanai lalata mada matsarye Kyasa Keda Parishrama Asatya Krodha Akaikna Ashaika Vishva Vibrama Vinamatva Pra Peksha Daya Ayo Dashodita, something like that. It's just unfortunately difficult to read. So translation, the 18 great faults are mentioned in the Vishnu Yamala, which says the 18 faults are bewilderment, sleep, error, material attachment without prema, material lust, which brings suffering, fickleness, intoxication, envy, violence, exhaustion, toil, lying, anger, hankering, worry, absorption in worldly affairs, prejudice, and dependency on others. Mm-hmm. These are 18 great faults. And if you think about it, pretty much all the main faults are covered there. So let's see. Let us read. This is now Srila Jiva Goswami's commentary. So he says, however, these same bad qualities are considered good qualities in Krishna in relation to the devotee's love. Thus, moha is illustrated as follows. Moha means illusion. We talk about, actually, and it's referring to the verse I'll just read from the Bhagavatam. Brahma vimoha na lila. I'm sure you've heard about that. The pastime when Lord Brahma was placed in not just moha, meaning illusion, but vimoha. Vi means very. So great illusion, Lord Brahma. So he quotes a verse, which is from that pastime. Thereafter, when Krishna was unable to find the calves, he returned to the bank of the river. But there, he was also unable to see the cowherd boys. Thus he began to search for both the calves and the boys, as if he could not understand what had happened. Hare Krishna! Oh, our mridanga player has arrived. Ah, now we can have a proper kirtan. Hare Krishna, mridanga player. Good boy. What's your name? Krishna. Oh, I've been looking for you for a long time. Good boy, you got the right name. So, yes, let's... So we're going to read through the examples he gives of the majority of these. Let's say a few words about this one. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Niravishesha Shunyavani Paschuchyadeshtane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Vajkaptur Vyasjakri Prasindu Vyavita Padidana Balamebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So this is the first one of these faults, moha, illusion. One of these great faults, which normally when someone is in like serious illusion, really, they just don't know what's going on at all. And they have some very wrong ideas. So then that's bad. It's very bad when someone's like that. They're lost. And their lives are just kind of hopeless. Hare Krishna. Oh, another mridanga player. See, we got our other mridanga player just arrived. You see that? We got two mridangas. Yeah. But now when Krishna is apparently an illusion, it's glorious. So this, the example given, it's from Srimad Bhagavatam by Srila Jiva Goswami. It's from the Brahma Vimohana Leela when Lord Brahma stole or tried to steal or thought he had stolen the cowherd boys and calves. So Krishna, when it just happened, the immediate situation just occurred, Krishna was apparently confused, in illusion. Where are they? Are they here? Are they there? Oh, they're not here. Maybe they're back down by the river. This is a type of illusion. Or actually, the way it's translated in this context is bewilderment. And Krishna was very concerned. He's looking here and there. And Krishna got into anxiety that when I go home tonight alone with no cowherd boy companions and no calves, and there were just thousands and hundreds of thousands of calves, but I'm going to go home alone. What will I tell the people? Oh my gosh, bewilderment. What will I say? What will I say when they ask me, where are our sons? What will I say? Will I say, oh, them? Yes, I'm not sure. Sorry. So this was bewilderment for Krishna. Apparent bewilderment. Welcome, everyone. Hare Krishna. Baitiyar. What do you say in Gujarati? Baitjao, is it? Is that Gujarati? Or what is that? It's crude, is it? Or is it normal? Village. So, right. So we're just talking about, for those of you who just arrived, we're just talking about how there are these 18 great faults. And the first one is bewilderment, confusion, what is going on? Which normally when people have them, it's a great sign of disqualification for those people. It's a great sign of disqualification. But when Krishna, and Krishna does not have them, but sometimes when he apparently has them, it becomes glorious. And in this case, what's glorious about it? Krishna's apparently very confused and really doesn't know what's going on. What's glorious about that? Well, what's glorious about it is that Krishna is so affectionate towards his devotees that he got into anxiety out of love. Krishna's not just some big man who just doesn't care. Someone gets killed, replace him. We read, maybe 2 years ago, something like that, a criticism of some big industrial company in America who had a sort of like a handbook, a manual, different manuals for different aspects of the activities of their factory. And one manual was about to do with first aid, or when people get sick, or even when people die on the actual job. And so it was a bit of a scandal. Someone got their hands on that manual, and there was a special section: how to replace someone who has died on the production line. How to replace him as quickly as possible so the production can go on. You see? This is real don't care attitude. Just get rid of him, because the production is what matters. But Krishna, and Prabhupada makes the point. We were giving a class in Vrindavan a few days ago. What day was it? It was Monday, wasn't it? On Monday, in the temple, in a Krishna Balaram temple. And what was the situation? Oh gosh.
Prabhupada said.
What did he say?
He was saying that Prabhupada said, context,
uh-huh. Anyway, the thing is that how Krishna cares. Oh yes, no, sorry. So in the class we gave the example of Lord Ram. From the Bhagavata, Lord Ram and Sita, how Lord Ram, it was particularly Lord Ram, when Sita was kidnapped, then Prabhupada makes the point in one of the purports there that Lord Ram, because he's Lord Ram, he could have just manifested another Sita. Or even Prabhupada says hundreds or thousands of Sitas, just like that. Within literally no time. But he didn't. He took the trouble to rescue Sita. She was not just, what do you call it, dispensable or expendable or whatever. Somebody could just be replaced and you don't worry about it. And in fact, at least in that case, Lord Ram went to great lengths to rescue Sita. What lengths, great battle, and all simply to rescue Sita, or in other words, because of his love for his devotee. So in this case, Lord Krishna is confused, apparently, of course he's not really confused, but apparently, where are my friends? And the cars. Maybe they went around the corner. So he goes around the corner. Oh, they're not there. Maybe they're back by the river. Oh, they're not there. Apparently he's confused, which is normally not good when people are confused or Bewildered means very confused. But Krishna's bewilderment is showing a good quality. One of his most wonderful qualities, in fact his actually most wonderful quality, that he is Bhakta Vatsala. He's very affectionate, caring, supportive, and all these types of things like that towards his devotees. So, yes, let's have a look at another one here. Let us see. Well, here's a nice one. Sleep, exhaustion, and toil are illustrated as follows. You know, of course, we all have to sleep. But to sleep too much, to be attached to sleep, I don't know if you know anyone who's the sort of person who, when it comes to be about, what shall we say, 7:25 in the evening, they start thinking, countdown, in whatever, a little while, I'll be able to sleep. If someone's like that, well, it's actually a bad sign. It means their lives, generally it means their lives are so uninteresting that sleeping, which means just, you know, sort of, it's nothing really, that becomes attractive. Because your life is so unattractive, sleeping, which is almost like dying, becomes attractive. I'm going to be able to sleep. Oh, how nice. Exhaustion. Oh. Well, we all know exhaustion. And toil. Working so hard. Too hard. Toil really means too hard. And it's just, one becomes overwhelmed. So here's a verse then, quoted from the Bhagavatam. Sometimes Lord Krishna grew tired from fighting and lay down at the base of a tree, resting upon a bed made of soft twigs and buds, and using the lap of a cowherd friend as his pillow. So, fighting doesn't mean in some big battle or something. It just means that the games of the cowherd boys, sometimes they wrestle. You know what children are like. Boys will be boys. And girls will be girls. And people will be what they are. So they would sometimes wrestle and have competitions and run and jump and do all these kind of, you know, sometimes slightly wild boy things. Yeah. So Krishna was involved. Krishna was there with them, with the cowherd boys. And in the course of all of that, Krishna would apparently become tired through the great effort and, yeah, become exhausted. So then he would lie down and sleep a bit. But while he was lying down, some of his friends would gather and he would use the lap of one of the friends as a pillow. In fact, there's a painting, you may have seen it. It's on the ceiling in the Radharadnath temple. You know, the paintings around, just over the windows. And it's in the Bhagavatam. Krishna's lying down. There's a few of his friends, like three or four. Some of them are singing. And Krishna is resting his head on the lap of one of them. He's sleeping because he's tired from pushing himself and working so hard. But that's glorious, because he's expressing his affection for his friends, and his friends are showing their affection for him, singing, fanning him. Very, very beautiful exchanges are going on. So even though it's exhaustion, toil, sleep, but it's glorious. It's very nice. Very wonderful. Here is, let's see, Era, Brahma, Brahma, is illustrated as follows. This is also from the Bhagavatam. When Krishna and Balaram, with the strength of their legs, crawled in the muddy places created in Vraja by cow dung and cow urine, their crawling resembled the crawling of serpents, and the sound of their ankle bells was very charming. Let me just mention one little thing. It's not related. I mean, it's related to what's said here, but not this theme of error. Or maybe it is. You know, when we do Govardhan Parikrama, I don't know how many of you have done Govardhan Parikrama. At least if you do it in one day, it's a long way. You remember, Yogini? I remember. You made it. I remember we pulled into Kusum Sarova, and there you were.
The last one.
Well, there you go, whatever, but you made it. It's a long way. It really is a long way. Anyway, You know, there, along the way, you get cows here and there, cows and bulls here and there. India, you know, it's like that. They love the cows. And therefore the majority of the cows are walking the streets, eating rubbish, plastic bags. Oh well, anyway, that's another thing, but it's a really important thing though. But on the road, you get all this cow dung here and there. And when we are walking in our bare feet along the road on that long 23 kilometers, Govardhan Parikrama, you know what we do? At least those who are in the know, we step in the cow dung, because it protects the feet. I mean, partly just because it's cow dung and it's auspicious, but it actually protects the feet. Because when you're walking such a long way, unless your feet are just hardened by doing it very regularly, just going everywhere with bare feet, you know, by the end of 23 kilometers, your feet may be thinking of leaving their body. Some get blisters, swelling. Okay. So yes, we step in the cow dung because it nourishes the feet and it protects the feet. It's nice. Okay, let's carry on. Very much pleased by the sound of other people's ankle bells, they used to follow these people as if going to their mothers. But when they saw that these were other people, they became afraid and returned to their real mothers, Yashoda and Rohini. Isn't that nice? The example is of error, making mistake. And normally, you know, if you mistake someone to be someone else, has it happened to you? It's happened to me. Mistake someone to be someone else and you start addressing them. And they say, you know, it can be embarrassing. Oh gosh. So error is a fault, obviously. To make a mistake is a fault. So Krishna and Balaram, they had ankle bells, and others had ankle bells. And Krishna and Balaram got into sort of ankle bell consciousness. And where there were ankle bells here and there, they would just go towards them. But sometimes they would just, without thinking and without looking, they would go towards someone who was not close to them. But because of, you know, they're just into this thing about chasing ankle bells, they would just go. But then they look up and see, oh, these are not our mothers. And they become, you know, concerned. They become concerned. I remember traveling on the other side of Joburg, on the highway, on the other side, Randburg side, going to a family's house, being driven by the husband, and the little child, I mean, very little, not very, very, but maybe like 1.5 or 2 or something. The father tried to put the child on the back seat so he could drive, and the child panicked, like really panicked, and the child was screaming, just like death was approaching. Oh yeah. And so the father had to take the child, put the child on his lap, and try to drive, with the child sort of climbing over him, that sort of thing. Yeah. So these things happen. So it would happen with Krishna and Balaram. And again, it's glorious. It's not like they're just little foolish little children who get into situations without thinking and then realize and panic, but it's showing their love for their mothers, the special relationships they have with their mothers. Let's see. Then another one is fickleness. Fickleness. Fickleness, you know, sort of excessive changeability. Here's another verse from the Bhagavatam. Our dear friend Yashoda, your son sometimes comes to our houses before the milking of the cows and releases the calves. And when the master of the house becomes angry, your son merely smiles. Sometimes he devises some process by which he steals palatable curd, butter and milk, which he then eats and drinks. When the monkeys assemble, he divides it with them. And when the monkeys have their bellies so full that they won't take more, he breaks the pots. This is serious fickleness. Sometimes, if he gets no opportunity to steal butter or milk from a house, he will be angry at the householders, and for his revenge, he will agitate the small children by pinching them. Then when the children begin crying, Krishna will go away. Another one, which isn't mentioned here, but it's mentioned elsewhere, is that if Krishna becomes a bit upset, you know what he does? He urinates on the floor in the house. That's really naughty. That should not be done. This is real fickleness. You know, just whimsical foolishness. And if a regular child does something like that, gee whiz, particularly deliberately, to agitate, that's not good at all. But when Krishna does it, it's good. Because Krishna's urine is nectar. Hare Krishna. Yes. But what he's doing, he's exchanging love. Like Krishna, fickleness, Krishna steals the butter. Perhaps you've heard the explanation why Krishna steals the butter. It's not just because he is someone who has a particular taste for butter, like, you know, generally everyone has their favorite prasadam. What's your favorite prasadam?
Paneer.
Paneer. Paneer and paneer, or paneer and something?
Paneer
would be
a chutney.
Tomato chutney? Just see. A traditionalist. What's your favorite?
Lasagna.
Okay. Anyway, everyone has their favorite. Everyone has their favorite. And generally people have a favorite based on the taste. It just, according to their experience, it just tastes particularly good, and therefore they go for it. But with Krishna, it's not that he just likes eating butter, because butter to him tastes good. Whereas for us, it may be more like that. Yeah. But there's an explanation, it's a nice explanation. Just try and think about this. Listen to this. That the cows are not just dumb animals, just, you know, dumb animals. The cows are devotees. They think, they feel, and they love Krishna. And so the cows are thinking, we want Krishna to get our milk and not anyone else. Not just these ordinary people, whoever they are. We want Krishna to get our milk. And then the milking is done by the ladies. The ladies. And when the ladies milk the cows, the ladies are thinking, we want Krishna to get this milk. And then the ladies transform quite a lot, actually, of the milk into various other dairy products. They extract cream, some they turn it to yogurt, some they make paneer, and then from that they can make, well, paneer chutney. they can make, you know, rasgulla, rasmalai, chum chum, and, you know, so many different things. And they can make butter. And when they're making all these things, they're thinking, we want Krishna to get this, whatever it is. In this case, butter. And that it's not just thinking, but they're feeling like that. And their love is going into those things. And I don't know how many of you are experienced in making butter, homemade butter.
You made, you would have made. Any of you ex-Lens? You made butter by hand, surely? Oh, that's cheating. We used to use an electric drill with a thing, you know, like a paddle on the end, and there's the machine, and so just, and you've got butter in a few seconds. Anyway, if you do it the traditional way, by hand, it takes time. And in fact, to my knowledge, you know, it takes time. It takes some time to make yogurt. It takes some time to make ghee. It takes some time to make all these different things. It takes some time just to milk the cows. But to make the butter, it really takes some time. I think the one time I was involved in making butter, it took us about an hour. Something like that. It was not an easy job. And you know the description in the story of the Damodar Leela? Mother Yashoda was doing like that, and she was perspiring. Because it's hard work. It's hard work. So, yes. So therefore, because it's more work to make butter than other things, more love goes into the butter. And Krishna loves to taste the love. This is Krishna's interest. Krishna is not interested really in if something is cooked, if something is very skillfully prepared, very expertly prepared. Krishna doesn't really care. Krishna wants to taste the love. Therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, when he was had an ashram in Mayapur, and there were brahmacharis particularly staying there. When the Mahaprasada would come off the altar, like in Lens and Nittai Gaurahari temple, he would personally take all the Mahaprasada, a few subjis, one or even a couple of varieties of rice, dal, fruit, milk, there's a little separate salt and pepper, and sweets, and just everything, and just mix it together. So it became like a paste. Because he didn't want the devotees to come and see, oh, here's the big plate of maha, the different preparations. Oh, I'll have some of this. No, not that, this. Which means we're thinking in terms of taste. What do I like? But rather we should be thinking, oh, some mercy. Because prasad means mercy. Prasad does not mean food. Prasad means mercy. The literal translation. So we do like that, so the devotees would get the idea that we shouldn't worry about the taste, we should worry about the bhakti, the love, the devotion which is there. Yes. So back to the butter. Back to butter. So the ladies wanted Krishna to have everything. But particularly the butter, because most of their love had gone into the butter. And Krishna wanted to taste their love in all the different things. but particularly in the butter because there was more love. But there was a problem, a sociological dilemma was there, that this is how they made a living, not by selling, but by trading the butter and different things for vegetables, because they were not growing vegetables. They were dealing with cows, so they would trade to get vegetables in exchange for dairy products. So the ladies knew that if we give away the butter to Krishna, which they really wanted to do and which Krishna really wanted, our husbands will become disturbed. Because how are we going to make a living? How are we going to maintain the family if you just like give away our assets? So they couldn't give it away. But Krishna wanted it, and he knew they wanted that he would get it, so Krishna stole it. Not just because it tastes good. Have any of you eaten, say, a quarter kilo of butter? Just out of the packet? Generally, people don't. So, but Krishna did. Krishna did. Because he wanted to taste the love. So it's fickleness. It's stealing. Stealing is very bad. Stealing is terrible. But when Krishna stole the butter, it was glorious. It was glorious. Because he's tasting the love of his devotees. Let's see if we've got time. Maybe one more. Let's see. Where are we? Fickleness. Well, envy. To become envious is not nice. Here's an example of Krishna. Oops. Oh my gosh. Krishna becoming envious. This is also the Bhagavatam. And it's from the Govardhan Leela, the beginning of the Govardhan Leela. The rain, the storm has started and it's very severe. By my mystic power, Krishna says, I will completely counteract this disturbance caused by Indra. Demigods like Indra are proud of their opulence, and out of foolishness they falsely consider themselves the Lord of the universe. I will now destroy such ignorance. This is envy. It's a form of envy. You know, there are many forms of envy. Meat eating is a form of envy. Killing the animals, it's a form of envy towards the animals. And to just eat the meat is a form of envy. Although you may not, you may be so kind of stupid, as most people are, I'm afraid, that they can't, it does not compute that, you know, some poor innocent creature who had his or her own life to lead and his or her own family perhaps was just killed just so I could have one meal. It's bizarre. But generally people are not capable of thinking so deeply, even though it's not very deep. Pretty straightforward. But it's envy. It's very severe envy, actually. So in this case, Krishna's kind of envious of Indra. Foolish demigods. What do they think they're doing? It's a type of envy. They think they're the Supreme Lord. I'll show them who's the Supreme Lord. Watch out, here I come. Krishna can do like that. And it's glorious because he is like that. He's way beyond these demigods. The demigods are like little ants compared to an elephant, or even a greater difference is there. They're just so tiny and ignorant living entities compared to the Supreme Lord. So when Krishna chastises not just Indra but different demigods in this way, it's glorious because he's like that. And he's showing us that he's like that. Let me just, last point we'll make. In Nectar of Devotion, there is a quality of Srimati Radharani that she is sometimes transcendentally envious of other of her girlfriends, the other gopis, some of them. And Nectar of Devotion gives a very interesting example. You know, you might think Radharani envious. No, it's not possible. Krishna envious. But this is transcendental envy. Srimati Radharani just saw Krishna's face, which had been decorated with gopi dots by another gopi. You're all familiar with gopi dots. Sometimes some call them dopey dots. But anyway, gopi dots. Let's just say gopi dots. Now if you want to wear them on Saturday, you can. But this girl, this other, one of her friends, had decorated Krishna's face with gopi dots in the most incredible way. Like fine detail. Everything perfectly symmetrical and just, you know, so hard to do. So hard to do. And she had done it perfectly. Not one little stroke was out of place. You know, sometimes they use brushes. You know, the brushes normally they have hairs or some sort of like hairs. For fine detail, they use brushes with one hair for very fine detail. So this girl had done it. And it was just like, you know, how can someone, a human being, do something like that? And Radharani said to this gopi, you know what she said? She said, you know, you are not beautiful. Sounds like envy, isn't it? You are not beautiful. No, you're useless. So it sounds like envy, but it's transcendental, means it's pure. The thing is, what's pure about it is that Radharani knows that Krishna feels pleasure by seeing the beauty of the gopis. Beauty, including how they dress, how they decorate themselves, their jewelry, their hair, and all these things. Because Krishna knows that they're doing it for his pleasure. It's an expression of their love. It's not just some fancy, some young woman, you know, trying to make herself look attractive when actually she's fairly ordinary looking. So the gopis, they present themselves. Physically, they're beautiful anyway, but they dress beautifully, decorate, etc. as expressions of their love. And when Krishna sees them, he appreciates. Again, not just because, you know, she's a good-looking girl, but because it's an expression of her love. And Krishna, when he feels that, when he appreciates, oh, how much love has gone into this gopi, the way she's presenting herself, Krishna becomes so affected by it, sometimes he starts shaking and sort of loses control a little. Maybe he'll drop something because he's so much affected by the love of that gopi or gopis. So now in this case, this girl was right in front of Krishna. We're talking about inches away, centimeters away. But Krishna was not affected. He was not shaking. Because when someone is shaking, how are you going to decorate their face nicely? It's just totally impossible. So Krishna was cool. And therefore she was able to decorate in fine detail, which took a little while. So therefore Radharani said, you're not very beautiful. In the sense that you didn't please Krishna. You didn't please Krishna. If you had pleased Krishna by your beauty as an expression of your affection, then Krishna wouldn't have been able to stand still or sit still. He would have been sort of dizzy. And, you know, I remember when I was a new devotee in London, the temple treasurer, sort of like the temple bookkeeper and petty cash handler sort of thing, and he would keep the books, the cash book, if you're familiar with bookkeeping. But he wouldn't sleep much, so he would fall asleep while writing the figures. He would fall asleep. And when he'd fall asleep, he's using a ballpoint pen, he'd fall asleep and his hand would go off. So you'd have all these pages of bookkeeping records with, you know, blue ink, red ink. Yeah. So this is transcendental envy. It's transcendental, it's glorious. That she's concerned. You didn't please Krishna. We want Krishna pleased. But you failed to please Krishna. So she criticized the girl like that. Because she wanted Krishna pleased more. So like these, and there's more. We'll see maybe tomorrow night anyway, some other time. We can go through the others. These faults, what are normally real faults. But when Krishna has them, or even when some great devotees have them, they become very glorious qualities, very wonderful qualities. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
So, devotees, Is this a housewarming program or is just a gathering? You had a housewarming program?
No.
Well, this is a housewarming program. Yes. Why not? That's cool. It's a housewarming program. So, what should we do now?